From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Israel bombs the occupied territories with U.S. fighter jets for the first time since the 1967 war. We'll talk with Hanan Ashrawi, a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Terry Greenblatt, the director of the Israeli National Women's Peace Organization, Bat Shalom, and Raji Sarani, leading Gazan human rights activist. Also, a British university accepts $6 million from British American Tobacco to establish an International Center for Corporate Responsibility. Professor Richard Smith, who's also editor of the prestigious British Medical Journal, resigns in protest. All that and more coming up on Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli helicopter gunships unleashed a missile strike on Palestinian targets in the Gaza Strip today, prompting new Palestinian appeals for international intervention. Witnesses said Israeli forces later killed two members of Palestinian President Yasser Arafat's Fatah faction. A surge in violence since Friday when a Palestinian suicide bomber killed five Israelis and Israeli airstrikes involving F-16 jets killed 12 Palestinians has heightened international concern that fighting is rapidly spinning out of control. In related news, the Israeli peace group Peace Now has issued a report charging that Israel has allowed about 15 new Jewish settlements to be constructed since January on land it occupies in the West Bank, despite growing international pressure to freeze such activity. Peace Now issued the report on the new outposts as Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon brushed off international and domestic criticism of his decision to order F-16 jet fighters to bomb Palestinian targets. Here in this country, President Bush used a commencement address at the University of Notre Dame yesterday to say that the involvement of religious institutions and federally financed social work is the next crucial wave in a war on poverty that President Johnson declared more than three decades ago. Bush said government did the right thing in the 60s by expanding services to poor Americans and the right thing in the 90s by putting limits on such assistance. Then, referring to Dorothy Day, the radical pacifist social activist and co-founder of the Catholic Worker Movement, Bush added, "Any effective war on poverty must deploy what Dorothy Day called the weapons of spirit." Both civil libertarians and some religious leaders charge Bush is dangerously blurring the boundary between church and state, and the legislation associated with the president's efforts is merely plodding through Congress. With his remarks, Bush was trying to give it a momentum it has yet to gather. Meanwhile, an interview with the Financial Times this weekend, Paul O'Neill, U.S. Treasury Secretary, laid out a vision for a radical reform of the U.S. tax structure, including a sweeping revision of Social Security, an abolition of corporate income tax and capital gains tax on businesses. Treasury Secretary O'Neill outlined far beyond any legislation currently before Congress. O'Neill said the present tax system is an abomination that requires changes to its very structure. He also questioned that the guarantees the government provides for full public subsidy of senior citizens' health care and retirement programs and the fact that one of the most senior cabinet members would lay out such a detailed and radical program is a sign that the administration has not been deterred by opposition to its initial tax cut plan. Interior Secretary Gail Norton is calling members of the National Rifle Association America's unsung conservation heroes. Norton told several thousand members attending the group's convention in Kansas City that the NRA and Interior Department have had a long history of working together to protect public lands. The NRA has bitterly fought congressional efforts at gun control and poured millions of dollars into supporting pro-NRA legislators. In related news, Senator John McCain defended his hallmark campaign finance reform legislation yesterday against criticism from the National Rifle Association that it impinges on freedom of speech. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan told the graduating class of the University of Massachusetts that the United States, as the world's biggest polluter, has a special responsibility to help fight global warming and promote conservation. He was speaking actually at Tufts Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy in Medford, Massachusetts. He said the United States, as you probably know, is the world's leading emitter of greenhouse gases, largely because it is the world's most successful economy. In a speech extending his criticism of President Bush's decision in March to reject the 1997 Kyoto Protocol on global warming, Annan warned that ignoring conservation could damage economic growth around the world. He added that the international community was in danger of losing hard-won gains in the fight against climate change.
Take it from me, don't be a do-batter, a do-batter, a do-batter. You'll put your foot on that ladder that leads you to that place below, and every day you'll grow sadder, you'll feel sadder, you'll get madder. So use that self-same stepladder to climb the other way.
Scrapping and fighting,
scratching and biting,
cheating and acting selfish makes your heart like a part
of the hardest hard shell shellfish.
Take it from me, don't you be a do-batter, a do-batter,
a do-batter.
Just step aboard that step ladder and climb the
Don't Be a Do-Batter, Sammy Davis Jr. featuring Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, and Dean Martin here on Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. For the first time since the 1967 war, the Israeli army on Friday attacked the West Bank and Gaza Strip with American-made F-16 fighter jets, killing 11 Palestinian police officers. The attack came as part of the deadliest week of violence since the beginning of the Intifada. It began when Israeli troops shot dead 5 Palestinian officers in what officials later described as a mistake. On Friday, a 21-year-old suicide bomber killed 5 Israelis and wounded more than 100 in a shopping mall in Netanya, Israel. Then Israel bombed Nablus and Ramallah. The Arab League of Foreign Ministers expressed their outrage on Saturday, declaring they were severing all political contacts with Israel until the violence stopped. It effectively halts the tenuous Egyptian-Jordanian effort to mediate a truce in the conflict and adds new pressure on the United States to intervene. U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell is expected to present today an American proposal to bring the conflict under control. Yesterday, Israeli tanks fired shells into the home of Colonel Jibril Rajoub, the head of the Palestinian Preventative Security Forces in the West Bank, only hours after he met with Israeli reporters in Ramallah. Rajoub was unhurt, but 5 of his officers were wounded. Palestinians accused Israel of trying to assassinate Rajoub. It was the second time in 10 days that the Israeli army struck his home. The Bush administration considers him. He was in Washington last month for talks with Secretary of State Colin Powell and CIA Director George Tenet. And today, Israeli helicopters fired missiles at Palestinian targets in the Gaza Strip, prompting new Palestinian demands for international intervention. We're joined by two people right now who just held a joint news conference in Jerusalem, Terry Greenblatt, director of Bat Shalom, the Israeli National Women's Peace Organization, and Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, member of the Palestinian Legislative Council and Secretary General of MIFTA, Palestinian Civil Society Group that monitors the human rights situation. Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, your comments on this latest round of violence and what is happening today.
Well, even talking about it in the abstract as the latest round in violence or retaliation does not really encompass the full horror of the situation. It is absolutely dangerous, extremely lethal, and it targets every single Palestinian. We have a captive Palestinian population under occupation, entirely besieged by Israel, within every town and city and village and camp. And then we have the constant shelling and pounding and assassination and killing and uprooting of trees, destruction of crops and homes. And then people talk about abstract violence. Everybody's lives are being affected daily by this. There is a serious deprivation, economic deprivation. There is serious threat. And, of course, the spillover effect cannot be overestimated. I think that Sharon's policies are absolutely irresponsible, immoral, and entirely devoid of any sense of responsibility, legality, or even political vision. And that's why there have to be some brave voices, people of conscience who will speak out and who will prevent Sharon from not just wreaking havoc right now, but from destroying the chances of peace in the future.
What about the use of US F-16s, Dr. Hanan Ashrawi?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, the U.S. gave Sharon room to maneuver. When the absence of American policy and the absence of any American political will to intervene or to hold Israel accountable, and with continued increase in military aid to Israel, and, of course, giving Israel a full cover for its violations, Sharon and his government exploited this room for maneuver in order to escalate beyond limits. They started with the expansion of settlement activities and were told by the Americans not to do that, and they shrugged that off. They used American weapons, starting with Apache gunships and other weapons, for the shelling of Palestinian homes, and they were told not to do that, and they didn't stop. They started a policy of assassinations, sanctioned assassinations as a matter of policy by the Israeli government, and of course they were told that this is not done, and they refused to stop. And then they escalated by using American F-16s, 16 warplanes, against a civilian population in their own homes, on their own lands. And again, they are entirely unrepentant, and Sharon threatens to even escalate further. So I don't know how long does it take for the U.S. administration to understand that what's happening is immoral, is illegal, and is, of course, reflecting on the U.S., and if the U.S. does not intervene effectively and does not curb this violence and insanity on the rampage, then very clearly it is guilty of being complicit in this whole carnage. I think it is about time that the U.S. evolves a foreign policy, it undertakes its responsibilities, and stops bailing Israel out even against what we consider war crimes or crimes against humanity.
Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, who is Jibril Rajoub, the Palestinian security chief, and why has he been so targeted, Israeli tanks shelling the Palestinian security chief, this just after he comes from a news conference in Ramallah?
Yes. Well, Jibril Rajoub actually was imprisoned by Israel for a long time, over 10 years during the earlier Intifada. Then he was expelled by Israel and to Tunis. He came back and he was a colonel. He's the head of the preventive security in the West Bank. He was in charge of security coordination, and he's been coordinating trilaterally with the Americans, with the CIA, with George Tenet, and he's been his frequent guest in Washington, as well as with the Israeli counterparts. And he even had tremendous criticism from the Palestinians for doing that. And this is not the first time his house has been targeted. I mean, to me, the horror is that not just the policy of assassinations, but also of shelling somebody's home. I mean, his wife and his children could have been targeted as well. This comes also after, remember last month there was a coordination meeting or a cooperation meeting at security level at the request of the American CIA and his counterpart in Gaza, Mohammed Dahlan, and the head of the Palestinian police and intelligence were returning from a trilateral meeting, and they were also shot at by the Israeli troops in a deliberate assassination attempt. So it's very clear that nobody's safe, number one. But number two, it seems to me that by escalating and targeting security leaders and political leaders, Israel is sending a very clear message to the Palestinians that there is nobody who's immune. Even the people who negotiate and coordinate with us are targets. And that Israel's policy of assassinations now encompasses the Palestinian Authority and the leadership of the Palestinian people at the highest levels. And this type of escalation is consistent with some very ominous signs and statements, actually, by Israeli military officials saying that they would like to destroy the Palestinian National Authority and see a total breakdown within the Palestinian population, which means ultimately that not only will there be chaos, but that you have destroyed the chances of having any counterpart and any negotiations in the future. Mm.
Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, what about the Israeli government saying that the attacks are a response to the suicide bomber that killed five Israelis and wounded more than 100 in a shopping mall?
As much as we deplore and abhor the targeting of any civilians of whatever nationality, no civilians, I don't believe anybody should be killed, but in particular innocent civilians. However, the real cause, I say the root of all evil in this situation is the occupation itself and the measures of the occupation. They're driving the Palestinian people into desperation. They're targeting every Palestinian. They're trying to strangulate and starve a whole population. And at the same time, they're saying we have to be docile and quiet, attempting to break the will of the people who are yearning for freedom, for independence, for liberty, who do not want to remain under occupation, is something that will not work. And the more Israel escalates, the more it provokes violence and retaliation, and the more it leads individuals even to commit such acts of violence. I think the cycle of revenge is absolutely lethal, and I think the root cause is the occupation and the mentality of the occupation, which is just incredibly racist and high-handed. And of course, this government in Israel that relies on extremism, whether it is ideological fundamentalist religious extremism or military extremism or right-wing political extremism. This combination, along with the veneer of the apologists from Labour, such as Peres and others, forms a very dangerous combination, a threat to Palestine, a threat to the region, as well as a threat to Israel itself.
Terry Greenblatt, you're the head of Bat Shalom, which in Hebrew means Daughters of Peace. You held a news conference with Dr. Hanan Ashrawi today in Jerusalem. What did you say?
Basically, we talked about the fact that a just peace is the only way out of the situation that we both find ourselves in, and that there is no military solution to the conflict. As an Israeli Jew, I can tell you that I wait and I wait and I wait for someone in our leadership to be able to be courageous enough to stand up and admit to the fact that they acknowledge, both the government and the military, acknowledge that there is no military solution. And part B to that would be that there will be no political solution until we can be upfront and again courageous and say that the occupation must end. We called upon the international community today to encourage their governments to put pressure on the Israeli government to end its policy of military attacks on the Palestinian population. We asked for international intervention both for the protection of the Palestinians, and I would say again, as an Israeli Jew, to begin to hold us accountable in a situation where we have proven ourselves to be incapable of holding our own selves accountable. And here I think I would like to take a moment to address the American community, and in particular the American Jewish community, who I understand has a very, very difficult time from where they are sitting and watching what is going on here, and want to support and show their solidarity to this country and what this country means to so many of them. And what I can honestly say is that today, by not holding us accountable to international standards, you are not doing us a favor. You are not assisting us, and it's counterproductive and it's dangerous. And if I can reiterate what Dr. Ashrawi said, the situation is every day ever more dangerous on all different levels. We also asked the international community to oppose Israeli attempts to strengthen the occupation, including its settlement activities. We asked the international community to hold Israel accountable according to the principles of international humanitarian law and UN resolutions, and that we again reiterate that any peace settlement must be based on a complete Israeli withdrawal from the occupied territories and in conformity with the UN resolutions.
We have to break for stations to identify themselves. We are speaking with Terry Greenblatt, who is head of the National Israeli Peace organization called Bat Shalom, Daughters of Peace, and also Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, well-known Palestinian leader, member of the Palestinian Legislative Council and Secretary General of MIFTA, a Palestinian civil society group that monitors the human rights situation in the Middle East, particularly the Gaza and occupied territories. We'll also be joined when we come back. We're hoping to reach Raji Sarani, Gazan human rights activist, as well as a rabbi who is against the demolition of Palestinian homes. Stay with us. You're listening to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. We're joined by a number of people to talk about the situation right now in the occupied territories in Israel. Dr. Hanan Ashrawi is with us. She is a central player in the struggle for a Palestinian homeland. She founded the Brzeit University Legal Aid Committee Human Rights Action Project and is a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council. Terry Greenblatt is also with us, director of Bat Shalom, the Israeli National Women's Peace Organization. They held a news conference together today in Jerusalem in response to what has been going on there. You have U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets flown by the Israeli military, killing 11 Palestinian police officers this weekend. A 21-year-old Palestinian suicide bomber killed 5 Israelis and wounded more than 100 in a shopping mall. The Arab League of Foreign Ministers expressed outrage on Saturday, declaring they're severing all political contact with Israel until the violence stops. And now U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell is expected to present today an American proposal to help bring the conflict under control. But George Mitchell, the former senator from Maine, is putting out the Mitchell Report today. The Mitchell Report is expected, the Mitchell Commission report is expected to call for an end to the current 7-month Israeli-Palestinian conflict and an end to settlements and what they're calling the excessive force of Israelis in response to the Palestinian revolt. What is the significance of this, Dr. Ashrawi?
Well, the Mitchell report actually came as a result of the investigation carried out by a committee set up in Sharm el-Sheikh in order to deal with the not just the violence, with the deteriorating conditions, and to try to prevent the recurrence and to find a way out. Therefore, it was a sort of international committee headed by George Mitchell with several memberships, including Javier Solana from the European Union, including Demirel from Turkey, Jagland from Norway. So in a sense, it is, and it was empowered to report to the President of the U.S. and to the Secretary General of the U.N. The report came after this extensive research. It is not a comprehensive or complete report, but as you said, it called for an immediate halt to the settlements. It tried to put in perspective the latest deterioration and the tragic breakdown in relations and the upsurge in violence, and at the same time, tried to make the Israeli army accountable as an army of occupation, and it pointed out to many problems with the behavior of the army. It also criticized the Palestinians and the Palestinian side and asked for a restructuring of the security forces within a system of command and with a political reference and so on. But as incomplete as it is, We believe that it can be a handle if taken along with the Egyptian-Jordanian initiative for ending this current crisis and breakdown and for preparing for a new and qualitatively different approach to peacemaking. Unfortunately, Israel has rejected both the Mitchell Report already and the Egyptian-Jordanian initiative. This government refuses completely to halt settlement activities, land confiscation, expansion of settlements, and at the same time refuses to accept responsibility and accountability for its persistent and willful human rights violations and crimes against humanity, because when you start shelling, you know, civilian areas and people's homes and a captive population, that certainly is a crime against humanity. It is not a war. There is no parity. You have an occupying power with a very strong army, and you have a people under occupation who are barely able to defend themselves, and they can't, basically. So now the American administration may be trying to use the Mitchell Report as some kind of opening, because so far the absence of American will, participation, policy, or sense of responsibility has led to this overstepping the bounds and the limits of any civilized behavior. And if the U.S. continues with its absence and with this role of what we consider to be collusion with Israeli excesses and extremes, then it means that the U.S. will bear the responsibility. So today the report will be released very shortly. We have had copies, and both sides have responded with their reservations. We have accepted it, and we said we will abide by it. The Palestinian Authority accepted it, despite, as I said, some reservations, because it doesn't point out to the basic asymmetry of occupier and occupied. At the same time, Sharon refuses its basic, its fundamental components, and has rejected the Egyptian-Jordanian initiative, which means that, as usual, Israel demands to call the shots, to get preferential treatment, to be above the law, beyond the accountability, and continues to behave like an outlaw state. And it is time that the U.S. intervenes.
We're also joined on the telephone, Dr. Hanan Ashrawi and Terry Greenblatt, by Raji Sarani, who is in Gaza right now. And he is the director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Raji Sarani. Are you there? Raji Sarani, are you with us? Well, we will try.
Hello.
Is that Raji Sarani? Raji Sarani?
Yes.
Hi. This is Amy Goodman at Democracy Now! I know it's a little hard for you to hear us on your cell phone. Can you describe what's happening in Gaza right now?
It's very hard for me to hear you.
Can you tell us the situation in Gaza right now?
Well, actually, for the last 8 months, I mean, situation deteriorated at an unprecedented level. And as you all are aware of about facts, the excessive use of force, disproportionality of use of arm without necessity, the willful killing, political assassinations, the bombardment by tanks and Apache helicopters, and finally with the F-16. And this brought the situation to unprecedented level of deterioration.
Let me bring in Rabbi Arik Asherman, who is with Rabbis for Human Rights, has been living in Israel, active in the movement against home demolitions. Rabbi Asherman, your response to the situation at this point?
Well, I'm just concluding a three-week trip through North America, and so I'm not in touch with everything that's happening right now on the ground. I would say the following, we have condemned violence on both sides, as both morally unacceptable and strategically counterproductive. But as already has been said on the program, at the end of the day, it is Israel that holds most of the cards in her hands, and Israel needs to take responsibility for that. And it's interesting that on the one hand, I think right now there are many voices, even on the Israeli left, don't cry so many tears against actions that are seen as defending Israel directly against people who are attacking us. And on the other hand, even there's starting to come out voices on the right in Israel now that say this latest escalation has gone too far. I think what is also, unfortunately, what we haven't succeeded successfully in terms of introducing into the discussion with for the general Israeli public, we have so many people who are saying that this whole thing started because the Palestinians rejected the peace process. And what people don't understand is the fact that this really started not because of what was happening at Camp David, or even because of Ariel Sharon's provocative visit, but because actions speak louder than words. And on the ground, parallel to whatever was happening in negotiations, there was ongoing land expropriations, tree uprootings, unfair water allocation, leaving families in the summer and fall with 2 hours of running water a week, when next door there was a settlement with a swimming pool and green lawns, all this saying to Palestinians that this is not a peace process, and even if it is, by the time it's concluded, we're not going to have anything left. What's in it for us?
Rabbi Asherman, I know that Raji Sarani is having trouble hearing, and I want to just catch him once before he hangs up. Raji Sarani, what are you calling for right now in Gaza?
Well, it's as simple as that. We have a state of war, and war crimes are committed, and it's likely going to be worse in the coming future. And there is conspiracy of silence by the international community, especially, I mean, Europeans. Concerning the United States, we have no illusions whatsoever. So accordingly, what the international community are waiting for, I mean, another massacre like Sabra and Shatila to occur here, another Qana. I think not only legally and politically speaking, but ethically, I mean, the international community should intervene, I mean, promptly, immediately, due to simple fact that Israel going, without any limits. When F-16s are used against civilians, what's left? I mean, another real massacre. I mean, facts are clear, bold, direct, and, I mean, something should happen before the worst to come.
Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, the significance of the Arab League saying they're breaking all ties with Israel.
Yes, well, the Arab League did not take that decision. It was the preparatory committee for the meeting of the Arab League, which is the ministerial, foreign minister committee, of the follow-up committee, and they recommended that political contacts be terminated or suspended. So in a sense, the countries that have agreements with Israel will not carry out any diplomatic boycott or severing of relations, and they have not carried out any kind of economic severing of relations or boycott, but only not receiving, let's say, of officials from Israel and not visiting Israel. This is a first step. It's a very, very modest step, but it is a signal because the Arab public is inflamed, and the Arab public opinion is telling the Arab leadership that they had better take a responsible position. They cannot stand aside and watch the Palestinians being shelled and massacred and assassinated and their homes demolished while they're giving only lip service or minimal support. So this signals a first step. It doesn't have tremendous impact on Israel, but it is a sign of things to come, that if Israel persists in its policies, it will be held accountable, if not by the U.S., its greatest ally and patron and protector and funder and donor, by the region itself, and that the Palestinians are not isolated, they are not alone. The problem is that so far we haven't seen any action from anybody. We've tried the UN and we were slapped with an American veto. We tried to ask for international troops and the U.S. of course refused that, international protection. They refused. We went to, we asked the high contracting parties to reconvene in accordance with the UN resolutions. to convene the signatories to the Fourth Geneva Convention. And again, that was entirely diluted. And we're hoping that they will meet in order to carry out steps for the enforceability of the enforcement of the Fourth Geneva Convention. Even in the Human Rights Commission in Geneva, all the reports from the Human Rights Commission, from the from Amnesty International, from different neutral as well as Israeli sources, clearly indicate that Israel is at fault, that it's carrying out a severe policy of systematic human rights violations, and yet there has been no action. So the Arab ministers or the follow-up committee decided to take this very, very modest step as a signal and in response to public pressure and public outrage, because it seems to me that what's happening will destabilize the Arab regimes and the whole region and will not be limited to targeting the Palestinians only. That's why we believe it's also important that anybody who has any sense of commitment to a global rule of law, to the applicability and universality of human rights, to accountability for states to behave within the realm of acceptable and civilized norms of behavior, there has to be intervention, protection for the Palestinians, accountability for Israel in clear and effective ways, beyond sort of lip service and beyond just verbal condemnations or symbolic slaps on the wrist. This is a situation of occupation that requires immediate intervention and alleviation. Otherwise, it's liable to have disastrous consequences on everybody involved, including the U.S., that so far wants to wash its hands clean and to say, I've had nothing to do with this, even though American planes, American funds, and American silence are contributing to the horror.
You know, just before, Terry Greenblatt in Jerusalem was making the point of the significance of the American Jewish Committee in weighing in this situation. And I wanted to ask Rabbi Arik Asherman of Rabbis for Human Rights, who's mostly in Israel, but here in the United States at this moment in Washington, about that.
About the American Jewish community?
Yes. And what role you see the Jewish community playing?
I think like many people in Israel and around the world, many people are operating with only part of the puzzle in their hands. People are not getting complete information about what is really happening on the ground. I don't know how many people are listening to the Pacifica Network, and sometimes the sources people are getting their news from are not being as thorough. I have found, however, that when I have traveled around North America as one of the few Israelis not in uniform, not a settler that has been in the territories in the last 7.5 months, that people have been surprisingly open and willing to hear. And I think that there are a number of North American Jews who are extremely concerned, who consider themselves Zionist, who consider themselves supporters of Israel, who do not necessarily condone all of the Palestinian actions, but are very concerned about what Israel is doing right now. You know that one of our campaigns right now is an olive tree campaign to replace and replant some 25,000 olive trees that have been uprooted or cut down by settlers or by the army during this intifada. And North American Jews have contributed over $40,000 so far to replacing those trees, to supporting the families who, even if those trees are replanted tomorrow, will be suffering economic losses for 6 to 10 years until those trees bear fruit. So I do believe that there are many people in the North American Jewish community who support Israel, but feel that these human rights violations are wrong.
And let's end with
a new coalition, I think, if I may.
Yes, Dr. Hanan Ashrawi.
Not in our name, and it's a coalition of Jewish organizations in the U.S. that are extremely active. They're reorganizing now with people throughout the U.S. From the Jewish community who have the courage and the integrity to speak out and to challenge the spin of the Israeli government that is misleading everybody, and of course the very selective reporting as Rabbi Asherman had said, and Terry, actually, that we do need the truth to come out, and we do need Jewish voices who do not want to be associated with this Israeli government's policies and measures, and who do not want to bear the consequences, if not the moral guilt of remaining silent. And it is precisely these voices that I think will make a difference. And within the U.S., we've had lots of contacts as Palestinians with many Jewish organizations that have tried to tell us that they stand in solidarity, that they do not condone what's happening on the ground, that they are people of principle, and that perhaps there are some, you know, organizations like AIPAC or others who are busy trying to support Sharon and the extremist policies of this government, and who are trying also to influence American policies in a way that would produce this extremely biased position. But on the other hand, we are extremely encouraged by the individuals and organizations who are speaking out, and many of whom are really facing, are being reviled by those who feel that the only approach is the Sharon militaristic approach towards the Palestinian question. And there are many who are trying to seek peaceful solutions and to articulate the components of a just peace and what it means for Palestine and for Israel, as well as for the whole region.
Raji Sarani, we give you the last word on this latest news of the United States saying they will be intervening, although General Powell looks like he is stopping short of a full-blown intercession. What does the U.S. resuming that role mean?
Well, we are greatly disappointed because we warned, I mean, previously, from this conspiracy of silence or the support by the U.S. administration to the Israeli government. To that extent, I mean, the Israelis exaggerated and used the F-16s against, you know, Palestinian people in the occupied territories. In the U.N. Commission for Human Rights in April, the U.S. objected to condemn even Israel with its grave breaches for the 4th Geneva Convention and international humanitarian law. And they even went one step more, and they pressured the European Union to abstain from the voting for that. And this encouraging systematically Israel all the way along to go on, and encouraging Sharon, who just saying, read my lips. Here we are facing a state of war, launched by the Israeli belligerent occupation towards the Palestinian people. The Israeli target, just as simple as that, you know, they want to finish up, I mean, the Palestinian National Authority, and they want to continue with their policies, I mean, of settlements, expanding it vertically, horizontally, and all this, you know, nothing to do, I mean, really, with the peace process and bringing a real circle of violence, I mean, to the entire area. Nobody, I mean, as well should expect Palestinians have to be good victims as well. And we are people under real serious occupation. Also, a court intended to be A and B, confidence-building measure and concluding final status negotiations between Palestinians and the Israelis, and obviously the confidence on zero level, and nothing has been concluded concerning final status negotiations. It's vice versa. I think all the way long, what we had in the last 7 years, de facto apartheid system and total social economical suffocation for the Palestinian people, much more now, and for the last 8 months, we have all that number, astronomic number of victims, either killings or injuries, and uprooting the trees and using the entire Israeli military machinery. I think the U.S. do have moral authority, and they can intervene like they just did, I mean, you know, in Beit Hanun, but with larger scale, to say to Israel, I mean, they have to seize, I mean, this act of war which Israel, I mean, doing on the ground.
Well,
and I think it's about time for the U.S. to intervene, nothing less or more, but to make the international legitimacy, the international humanitarian law, the Fourth Geneva Convention, in practice, this can't be postponed. I mean, every day, every week, every month passing, it means much more killings and injuries. Unfortunately, I mean, for the Palestinian people, basically, and that's totally unjust and unfair.
Well, I want to thank you.
Sorry?
I do want to thank you all for being with us. We've come to the end of this segment. Raji Sarani, director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, speaking to us from Gaza in the occupied territories. Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, one of the leading Palestinian activists, fighters for a homeland. Terry Greenblatt was with us earlier, director of Bat Shalom, the Israeli National Women's Peace Organization in Jerusalem. And Rabbi Arik Asherman, Rabbis for Human Rights here in the United States, but spending most of his time in Israel, particularly opposing the home demolitions of the Israeli army of Palestinian homes. We will certainly continue on this issue. You are listening to Democracy Now! When we come back, we're going to take on another issue, which is a major tobacco company funding a university center on corporate responsibility and the response of one of the leading British doctors and researchers to that endowment. Stay with us. You're listening to Democracy Now! Free Speech Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. The editor of the British Medical Journal resigned last week from Nottingham University, a leading British university, in protest at its acceptance of some $6.5 million from the tobacco giant British American Tobacco. The grant was for the establishment of an international center for the study of corporate responsibility. The resignation is the latest embarrassing departure for Nottingham since it accepted the money. One of its leading cancer researchers resigned in protest over the issue in March. The university decided in January to accept BAT's donation to found Britain's first international center for corporate social responsibility, believing that short-term criticism would outweigh long-term benefits. We're joined on the telephone right now by the researcher who resigned, Richard Smith, editor of the British Medical Journal, as well as Philip Dolling, who is a spokesperson for Nottingham University. We welcome you both to Democracy Now!
Hello.
Hello.
Good to have you with us. Why don't we start with Philip Dolling, why the university accepted the money?
Well, universities in the UK for many years now have been urged to seek funding from private industry. The university carried out a very careful consultation both within the faculty and outside the university, and also took very, very careful account of guidelines that have been drawn up by the umbrella organization that runs the university system in the UK and the Cancer Research Campaign. And these guidelines had actually followed an instance about 4 years ago when the University of Cambridge accepted a donation from the tobacco industry. And so having accepted that we were well within these guidelines and that, after all, the tobacco industry is completely legitimate, then the university authorities decided that we could and should make good use of the money that was available.
Richard Smith, Professor Richard Smith, why did you resign?
I think that by taking this money, Nottingham University is besmirching itself, and it's giving a respectability to the tobacco industry that it just doesn't deserve. I mean, it has killed 100 million people in the 20th century. It's on track to kill a billion this century. And I think it's by far and away the most corporately irresponsible of all industries. I mean, I am not against universities taking private money. I think it's good and important to do that. But I think they've made a very serious mistake in taking this money from the tobacco industry. I think the tobacco industry feels under tremendous threat, and it needs all the friends it can buy. And it's bought some rather important and rather influential people rather cheaply in Nottingham.
Philip Darling, spokesperson for the university, just what about this issue of a tobacco company endowing a center on corporate responsibility?
Well, the money comes completely without strings. The center will not be named after the company. The professorial chairs we're going to appoint will not carry the name of the company. British American Tobacco is one of what we hope will be a number of sponsors of the Center for Corporate Social Responsibility. Who knows? The whole question of the ethics of the tobacco industry might very well be a very good opening subject for research. The money is available. It's a legitimate industry. The British government takes £8 billion a year in tobacco revenue. The social services in Britain would probably not exist without the tobacco revenue. The money is there. It's to be used. We are going to put it to good use.
Can I make the point? I think it's quite interesting that Philip is actually putting the arguments that you hear all the time from the tobacco industry. You know, we employ lots of people. We pay money into the exchequer. Social services are funded out of tobacco money. I think in a way this illustrates the point that British American Tobacco, for a rather small amount of money, has got prominent people like Philip and Sir Colin Campbell, the Vice Chancellor of the university, making the arguments that the tobacco industry usually has to make for itself and which it finds not many people listening to.
Richard Smith, you follow another professor who has quit, and he has taken, Professor David Thurston announced he's going to move his cancer research to the London School of Pharmacy as a result of the donation. Philip Darling, is this a loss for the university?
Oh, yes, naturally it's a loss. I think David Thurston, in the circumstances, with the attitude of the cancer research campaign, probably didn't have a lot of choice. And yes, of course, we're sorry to lose him. I don't think it's a decision that David Thurston made easily. We would not, I think it's probably fair to say, have taken this decision to accept the donation had it not been for our very, very clear belief that we were well within the guidelines that had been set by the cancer research campaign and by Universities UK for the acceptance of money from the tobacco industry. Now, we believe that we have followed these guidelines to the letter, and it seems a question of what we would probably call moving the goalposts here. And I think that perhaps David Thurston had little choice. In the case of Richard Smith, too, yes, we very much regret his decision to resign from his honorary post at the University of Nottingham. And you know, we respect his decision. We thank him for what he has done. I think we're also looking for people to respect what has been a corporate decision on the part of the university. We took this decision actually in December last year. The decision by the university's management group then was ratified by all of our governing bodies. We have a council, we have a senate, which consists of the academics, and we also have a court, which actually has people from the local community. It has head teachers from schools, all sorts of people. And I think from those three meetings, which probably involved up to 500 people, I can remember two people who dissented from the decision. So it's a decision that was taken after very careful consultation. It followed the guidelines laid down nationally, and it's been ratified almost without dissent.
Richard Smith.
Could I say something there? I mean, I accept entirely what Philip says, and I hope that out of this episode we can start a national debate in Britain about what do we think about academic institutions taking money from the tobacco industry, because I think things are rather confused at the moment. As Philip implied, the Cancer Research Campaign, which is a major funder of cancer research, seems to be changing its position. And I think we need a debate that runs right across the country that isn't focused just on Nottingham. But I would like to make the point, I'm not sure that Nottingham's consultation exercise was as good as it might have been. I mean, I didn't hear anything about the decision until it was made, and that's not perhaps not so surprising because I'm part-time, I'm not there very often. But I had a debate in the medical school with Sir Colin Campbell, the Vice-Chancellor, and about 100 people turned up there, maybe 90. About 20 people spoke, and only two people spoke very hesitantly in favour of taking this money. The vast majority spoke against, and they resented, too, the fact that they hadn't been consulted. These
Richard
were academics from the medical school and also doctors from the National Health Service in Nottingham who actually do most of the teaching of students.
What about the argument that the centre wouldn't exist, the Centre for Corporate Responsibility, if British American Tobacco had not funded it?
Well, I don't think that Philip's arguing that. I mean, I'm sure they could find money from other places. I think it's not a case of whether the centre exists or not. I think it's a matter of whether they take money from tobacco. And I think it's particularly problematic that they've taken this money for a Centre for Corporate Responsibility. Because, as I said at the beginning, I think no industry has behaved less ethically than the tobacco industry. I mean, they have been denying the evidence for now 40 years now that tobacco is extraordinarily harmful. They have systematically infiltrated scientific societies, universities, medical journals, newspapers, even the WHO to try and undermine the science. So I think no industry has behaved in such an unethical manner. So to use their money to partly fund this centre, I think, is to get it off to a very poor start. And I'm sure that it would have been possible to find the money from other places. This is, after all, not that large amount of money. I suggested to Sir Colin that we could probably, with a bit of effort, raise this money from jumble sales or garage sales, as you call them in the US.
As editor of the British Medical Journal, where do you see do you see this issue of corporate money affecting academic research very often?
Yes. I mean, there's two issues, I'd say. One is, I think we do need a debate in Britain, and I think actually there's been a fuller debate in the US about academic institutions taking money from the tobacco industry. And as I said before, I hope that this episode will spark that debate. We also see a lot of corruption, in effect, of medical journals by money from the tobacco industry. There was a rather famous study published in JAMA that looked at a series of reviews as to whether or not passive smoking was harmful, and some of the reviews concluded that it definitely was. Others were less certain. When the researchers from UCSF looked at the determinants of what decided which results they got, they discovered that the overwhelming factor was funding by the tobacco industry. Research funded by the industry tended not to find positive results, whereas research that was funded by public money did. I think we have increasing evidence within medical journals that source of funding has a rather powerful influence on how people interpret results and what sort of studies they do.
On that note, I want to thank you both very much for being with us. Richard Smith, editor of the British Medical Journal, resigned his honorary post at University of Nottingham in Britain when it accepted more than $6 million from British American Tobacco to fund its Center on Corporate Responsibility, as well as Philip Dowling, spokesperson for the university. That does it for the program. Democracy Now! Produced by Chris Abrams and Brad Simpson. Anthony Sloan, our engineer. From the embattled studios of WBAI, from the studios of The Band and The Fired, from the studios of you, our listeners, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Democracy Now!
On everything that's being bought and sold, and a couple of interesting sponsorships that you talked about when you buy things wholesale. One concerns the State of the Union address. Peter, who has that been sold to?
Well, Well, actually, that's exciting because Chef Boyardee is now sponsoring the State of the Union. You know, the former State of the Union address is now the Chef Boyardee Homestyle State of the Union.
And, you know, that wonderful stirring moment where the camera pans up to the balcony and the president salutes the first lady. Well, she will be sitting next to a giant pan of actual canned spaghetti with the logo on it, because it's now a sponsored State of the Union.
Now, I just want to go back a step. You also referred to a Kraft macaroni and cheese being a sponsor of the Democratic National Convention, but I believe that's not a joke.
That's true.
That is true.
No, I have to tell you, I was over at the
DNC. It's hard to tell. Yeah. It's very hard to tell.
I must tell you.
That's, of course, the hardest part of doing the site, is that every time we would come up with something, we'd open the paper or look on the web and find out that we had to go a little bit further with the satire.
Yeah, it's true. Your listeners should have sympathy for those of us trying to satire money in politics, because it's tough to outdo the real thing. We had to sell out the whole damn United States. It is true. I got a goodie bag from the Democrats yesterday when I visited the convention, and it was donkey shaped macaroni, little macaronis. And that's not a joke. But then again, we don't think hypocrisy is a joke, right? So it's okay.
It's not a joke, but it is sort of funny.
Well, yeah.
It's confusing.
It is. You know, Kraft is the cheese arm of a major tobacco company.
And would you care to name that company? Philip Morris.
Philip Morris, yes. And we actually have some advertising from an unnamed big tobacco company on our influence exchange, because that's another thing is we do sell advertising. And this ad will be...
Sorry, Michael. Real advertising?
No.
Okay.
Satiric advertising. And this one says, we're emptying our wallets to make room for you in our pocket. Signed, Big Tobacco.
Well, Peter Hirschberg, thanks so much for stopping by today.
Michael Markman, it's been great to have you here.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck with the website. Again, the website address is www.hypocrisy.com. It's being debuted this evening at the Shadow Convention as part of the general evening merriment.
And I want to get in on the free cheese giveaway.
This concludes part 2 of KPFK's exclusive highlights of the Shadow Convention, 4 days in August.